Hello there and welcome to Full Chat with me, David Prutton.
And me, Ewan Thomas, celebrating all things that we love about being on two wheels. Now, Full Chat is powered by Bikesure. As the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, Bikesure will tailor a quote to your exact needs, helping you save money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance and much, much more.
Don't forget to please press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from so that you never miss an episode, or you can watch the whole show on YouTube right now for those of you who like pictures as well as sound.
Right then, it's another week and it's another guest, and I can't help smiling because, listen, I love this podcast and I get excited all the time. But this guest tonight is someone who's personal to me, and what I mean by that is this was my inspiration to even become an athlete. This athlete here who we're going to speak to tonight is just one of a kind. He probably doesn't need a microphone. You'll all know his voice as soon as he starts talking. He really is a one-off, a brilliant athlete himself, and he motivates me and many, many people every time they see him. He is, of course, the one, the only Chris Akabusi.
Look at you and Thomas, you're far too kind. I'm here with two Southampton legends, Dave Prutton, Ewan Thomas. Mate, I'm in heaven. Check it out.
Well, we're in heaven. Prutz, let me start by telling you this. I'll tell you a little story about Boosie, right? I remember once I used to do a radio show in London. You know the station as well. Love Sport Radio. And my producer said, we've got Chris Akabusi booked tonight. We're going to be talking West Ham. We're going to have him on for half an hour. Do you think he'll be all right? Do you think he'll have a lot to say? I said, watch this. I didn't even ask you a question, Chris. You just went for it. And the whole interview, I just laid back and went, cheers, Boosie. You're never a shy man, are you?
Well, I've never been shy. I was the sort of kid at school, always being told, Akabusi, sit down, shut up and stop running around. I always laugh at that because I earned my money by getting up, running around and laughing. But there you go.
It's a joy to have you on, Chris. I mean, and I can see it in Ewan's face. You should have seen him when we were warming up to get chatting to you. He's never been on so early. He's never been so well prepped. He knows exactly what he's doing, is exactly what he's talking about. But you two obviously go way, way back. Can you remember the first time you met my esteemed co-host?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. Down at the sports centre. This bright-eyed kid come down with his old man. And, you know, been in the biking and all that sort of stuff, and BMXing and all that sort of stuff. And was going to come down and join us and do a few laps. Of course, you know, lots of people come down and join us and do a few laps. Not many hang tough. And you've got this young, sprightly kid hanging tough with Roger Black, Tom Bennett, Paul Sanders. And we've got a little guy, Howsworth, get to the back. You and Thomas is coming in already, mate. And he's only just joined us. Howsworth, go back. Mike Coker. They weren't mean anything to you, but we had this great big group. And what we would do, we'd all go to the line, you see, and we all had our pecking order. You know, Roger Black, Tom Bennett, yours truly, Paul Sanders, Paul Howsworth. And of course, you always got to be right in the back because you're a new kid. As I know, about two or three reps, before you know it, he's on your jock strap. Hang on, we've got a good one here, mate.
Yeah, I've got to tell you, though, for me, it started way before that. And I've told this story before, but, you know, I think, I don't know about you as a footballer, Prutz, whether you had someone you looked up to as a kid or, you know, someone who you aspired to be like. But for me, it was 1991, Tokyo, 4x4, World Championship final. Chris on last leg, you know, Roger had got a silver in the 400, went on first leg, and everyone was like, why is he not on last leg? And you could see why, just with the guts you used to run with Chris. And, you know, I was so inspired to not only want to be an athlete, but I was proud to be British that night, you know, just watching what you four did, beating the mighty Americans. And I know ever since you've been an athlete, you do a lot of motivational talking. I've heard you speak a number of places, and you leave the room absolutely buzzing with your enthusiasm and your joy for life. And I think that's why everyone loves you, Chris, still many, many years after you've been an athlete. You had such a big impact as an athlete, but then since then, your personality and your character, it's a beauty to see.
But I think, you know, we were very, very lucky that we did track and field athletics in a period where track, I don't want to say it was as big as football, but it was up there with football, cricket, rugby and track. And because we had terrestrial TV, people got to see us and get to know us. and see our personalities. And, you know, obviously, like you said, I'm energetic, I'm enthusiastic, I speak at 100 miles an hour. You know, one of my stories is when I did Record Breakers for a year, enthusiastic, bubbling, brook. And they said to me after the year, Akabusi, it's great, we love your energy, but nobody can understand you. I was speaking in hieroglyphics. So I had to go away and get execution lessons. So I went away, I got my execution lessons. I come back the next year. Good morning, boys and girls, ladies. Oh, no, Chris, go back. We want that crazy dude again. Check it out, popping that new world record. So what I'm trying to say is, we were lucky because, you know, your energy came through and people saw you. And in a name like Akabusi, you know, ain't many Akabusis in the world. So I think I was really, really lucky, you know, that the brand, the energy, the name, and the time that I and you became popular was a time when people loved track and field athletics and it had the same sort of status in people's minds, you know, as football, cricket, rugby, you know, and it was only BBC, ITV, you know, a few channels. So people got to know you. So, yeah, I'm really, really grateful that I was running around in a time that I was Ewan.
I think that was a key thing I was going to say, Chris. You took the words right out of my mouth because it was that terrestrial era. No YouTube, the internet very much kind of away in the distance, not 27 platforms here and there where people are chucking things at you 24/7. It was literally 4/5 channels and the big events were the big events, whether it was a World Cup, whether it was the FA Cup final, whether it was World Athletics Championships, whether it was the Olympics. It was appointment TV. It wasn't watching it on catch-up, was it? It wasn't watching it 2 or 3 hours down the road and seeing it on Plus One or whatever. It was like, well, they're running now, so get in here and watch it, because if you don't watch it now, you'll never see it.
We had something called the Philips Nights of Athletics, sponsored by Philips, obviously, on a Friday. So Friday night was Athletics Night. And you tuned in to see where everyone was running. And we were lucky. I mean, you and those, Andy Norman. Andy Norman was a great big empresario. And he always made sure that he got a few Brits in with the Mighty Americans. So people got to see you. And then on a Sunday, we had, I mean, this is unbelievable now, but like the GRE, which is another sponsor, it was just like the local club athletics. And you could see GRE athletics on a Sunday in grandstand. So people would get to see you coming up through the sort of, you know, the sort of National League of Track and Field Athletics. And then on a Friday, get to see you run against the Americans, the Russians and the Germans. So you really got ingrained in the psyche. People saw, I used to wear my army vest. I was a soldier. So people go, oh, that's the guy with the army. Yeah, the sergeant, the big laugh. You know, so people begin to sort of follow your career right from the very, very beginning. There were great times. And actually, I feel sorry, but I know that the young athletes today, they're missing something because you've got to search on the button. Where are they? Red Eye, ITV, BBC, what channel? YouTube, got Prime TV. You've got to look for them now, haven't you? But back then, it was in your face.
I think also you're doing yourself a slight disjustice. You weren't just the big bubbly soldier. You were a bloody good athlete, Chris. And, you know, a lot of people might not realise how good you were and what you achieved. So, you know, as a four hurdler, you know, have you still got the British record? You had it for freaking forever. Have you still got it?
Obviously, yeah, I know. They took yours, didn't they? 44-37, they took yours.
Yeah, mine's gone.
Mine's still there.
Mine's gone. Right, Chris, it's clear you talk fast. We know you used to run fast. And I've heard stories about your old Capri down the N3 motorway. I know you could drive fast. Motorbikes. Now, it's something I know you're into. And I'm sure you rode those fast as well. Talk us about your earliest memories of being a motorbiker.
So my first start, can you remember? It was a yellow Puch, P-U-C-H. It was a moped. Puch 50 or 90, I think it was. Now, all my mates, I went to school called Edmonton County, London N9, North London. And they were all in these Yamaha FTSIE, little sort of like miniature 50cc, get your knee down. And I turned up in my yellow Puch 50. But I loved it because it was freedom. I was 16 years of age, 15, 16. I had this little Puch and I could go London, Tottenham, Finsbury Park. I mean, I even went up to Cambridge on my little Puch 50, mate. It was just great. So I remember that. It's of freedom. you know, not, you're not going under, what is it? 1-2-3. That's it. The 1-2-3, Enfield Town, Turnpot Lane. You're not going into 1-2-3, mate. You're on your little puck 50. Oh, I used to love that little thing. I used to go schooling it the whole 9 yards.
Chris, I'm fascinated to know where you go from there to what the journey is from that little bike or the bit that gets you in and around London to your test and then to your bike journey after that. So I presume you could ride that without needing your full license, could you? You could get on it and get your L plates on and just go flying around.
Yeah, you had to have L plates. There was a guy called Gilly, Steve McGill. So Neil was my best mate. Steve was my best mate at school, but a guy called Neil. Neil, his brother, used to have, well, he had two bikes. Norton 750.
Nice.
Yeah, he had a Norton 750. And what was it? Anyway, Norfolk Road, London N9. You go into his little two up, two down. Well, his mum's two up, two down. Past the corridor. And the kitchen had a Norton 750 and some other jack bike that was in there. And it was constantly on again, off again, dealing with it, cleaning it. And that really got me inspired. Seeing Neil and his brothers on this great big Norton 750. Oh, what a beauty. And, I mean, he used to ride a jack bike and clean the Norton.
And one for show and one to go.
Yeah, there's something about it, isn't it, Chris? With a bike, it's the drama, it's the noise, the smell, the fact you can get your helmet on and you can disappear into your own little world. It, for people who don't ride bikes, I don't think they'll ever understand the freedom and the special feeling it gives you.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, Ewan, the smell, not just of the machine and the bike, but of the countryside. When you're on your bike, you get all of these olfactors just up your nasal cavity. And you just sense that you're part of this wonderful universe. Mm-hmm. You're part of it. You know, you obviously things are going past at speed, but you're almost indelibly inked inside of the whole atmosphere. Everything. Obviously, you catch a few flies, obviously, especially back then when you had your little visors like that. But, you know, it's just beautiful to be part and parcel of the world when you're on your bike. You know, and it took me a while, to be fair, you know, once I got into cars for quite a while, I really got into my bikes when I had the midlife crisis. I had a midlife crisis.
Chris, I mean, the gist of what we're talking about on this podcast and the wonderful people that we're speaking to, and that we just try and, we've all got the common ground, but it's what we individually take from it and how you distill it. That, I mean, we're going to go a long way to find anyone that can describe it just as you've done there any better, because that is absolutely, absolutely perfect what you said. Because the minute you say smell and sense, it's such a vivid kind of button pusher, because it is the countryside, it is kind of pine trees, it is, you can smell when the rain's coming as well, can't you? Wow. You can think, oh, I'm all right here, and then you think there's a big cloud over there, and then helmet comes up and you go, yeah, that's definitely rain coming, and then you kind of change your kind of focus with it, but it is absolutely that. There's no other way of describing it, of being absolutely right in the centre of the whole thing. And you are going at speed, but in the middle, it feels like it's going really slowly, doesn't it? Because you can think, I can see everything, and I can hear everything, and I can smell everything. It's gorgeous.
Oh, 100%. That you can see the gravel. You can see the changes in the road. You see the cat's eyes. You know, you are not separate from the world. You are part of the universe. You are integral part of this whole ambiance. I mean, I'm talking very much when you're on your jack. You know, when you start, you know, because I'll go on later on when I started going on the three counties, on the three counties rides, you know, Surrey, Hampshire, Wiltshire, and you're, mate, then all of a sudden you're with others and you're going into the curves. All of a sudden, you get a different dynamic. It's a completely different dynamic on your jack around the country lanes and just becoming part and parcel of his universe. You are not separate. You are indelibly inked to this And you're not supposed to be racing, but you know what it's like when you get, into the group.
Okay, okay, quick bit of mid-show housekeeping for you all. If you haven't already, please press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from so that you never miss an episode, or you can watch the show on YouTube. Ewan, back to you, my friend.
Chris, I've got to ask, you spoke so eloquently about what biking brings you, the senses, being one with the universe. Now, you could sell that to anyone, but could you, or did you have to sell it to our old coach, Mike Smith? Did he know back then you were riding big motorbikes?
Well, Ewan, to be fair, when I was an athlete, I wasn't riding. And there's no way I could say to Mike Smith on a Monday, I can't train because I've fallen off my bike. Oh, absolutely no way, Jose. Now, this was me coming back to it. So, you know, I had to push and stuff. Then I joined the army, got into athletics. It was like, and then I retired when I was 32, 34. And it was my midlife crisis when I was 40 that I bought myself a Suzuki Marauder. There's no way I could go to Mike Smith and tell him I wanted to ride a bike. Absolutely no way. This was part of my bad period when I got the bikes. I was smoking cigars. Fat Boy cigars, the Monte Cristo wedge. But if you see me with Monte Cristo wedge, it means I've had a few bevvies. So I have a Monte Cristo wedge and I was riding my Suzuki Marauder. Do you know what one of those are?
Is it, yes.
Suzuki Marauder. It's like an imitation Fat Boy. You didn't know. It was a Fat Boy.
A fraction of the price.
Exactly.
Did biking never leave you though, Chris? I know you said it, you know, when you joined the army, then you became an athlete, you didn't ride motorbikes until you retired quite sensibly. But was the love always there in the background? Did you always think to yourself, I've got to get back on a bike one day?
Yeah, I mean, so young soldiers, you know, you got to think when you're a young soldier, you are 19, 21. All the soldiers had bikes. It was, well, not all, I mean, it's a exaggeration, but loads of soldiers bought bikes. You know, because you get all of this money. Once you've had a few beers and a few chippies, what do you spend your money on? These boys are getting bikes. So, yeah, I always saw that. You never lose it. I remember when I was in Germany, the big rave actually in Germany was the Honda Goldwing. All the boys were getting the Honda Goldwing. And it was a great cruising bike.
Old bike for young lads to be chucking around. I mean they're gorgeous looking bikes, but it's akin to going, do you know what my first car is going to be? I'm going to go for a Volvo Estate. That's exactly what I'm going to do. Start tearing around.
You have two. You have the old Goldwing to get you from Germany back to the UK.
Yeah,
and then you have a little something to run around the German Strassers. But it never left me. But I was into my athletics then. You know, I knew where my bread had buttered, so there was no way that I was going to jump across on the bike when I was running.
When you're talking now, Chris, because I mean, it's funny because even in the introduction, before Ewan had said your name, that laugh. Most people, if you're listening, you're not knowing who was on, you'd instantly go, well, that's obviously Chris Akabusi. That's obviously who's going to be on with us. Yeah. So, particularly for someone like you, this is what fascinates me about riding motorbikes. The minute you put the helmet on, that's it. You're just another biker, aren't you? What kind of reaction would you get when you pulled over? And because, as you know, bikers always talk to each other. Because that would be, helmet would be off. And I mean, nine people out of 10 that you meet would go, bloody hell, Chris Akabusi just got off his motorbike there. And then obviously they come over and start talking to you. Is that sense of, because of how gregarious and how larger than life you are, is it nice just to put the helmet on and lose yourself, as you said, in such a lovely, eloquent way, and just being, I'm just a biker now?
Yeah, so most of the time, I'd ride on my jack, full tank, go around, come home. I'm not taking my bike off unless I'm going to put petrol in the tank. I often did cruises across to Germany because I was married at the time. My wife there, she was Monica's a German. So I'd go with my brother-in-laws, they both had bikes, and go to Germany. And then the Tuesday group, they were, I'm sure you were in the same, well, and for you too, plus. You know, people get quite protective of you. So we would stop off at different venues, but I'm part of the group and I'm inside the group. So, you know, you're hearing around the countryside, you're doing your bit, but when you park up your bike, you're in the group, and so you're with your mates. And of course, people are going, you know, it's like, you know. But after a while, you don't even see it because you're with your mates. You're with the group.
Yeah. Mm.
That's nice, though, isn't it? The fact that your circle of friends, your circle of trust, if you want your Tuesday night bikers, treat you no differently from anyone else, and you're just part of the team, and that's kind of nice, isn't it?
100%, Ewan. It was a beautiful, beautiful break. You're one of the guys. You're in the second group, son, because you ain't good enough. Get back down there. But it's great. You know, you might be kicking the track, but we're kicking the road. Yeah, fellas, crack on. It was good fun. No, it was great. It was great to be just part parcel of the crew. I absolutely loved it. I wanted to say as well, what was really good is that because you had to have your sense of head on, track days. I used to love track days because you can do stuff. You can come off your bike and you can fall into the hay. Okay, you've matched up your bike, but you're walking away. So track days are great.
It's something that I've never done. I mean, is it a proper, obviously you need to, everything that you take with you, everything that you've got to get on the track is there. And it's very heavily, not policed, that's the wrong word, but supervised. And you get taught literally how to work the bends and how to lean. And I presume you get taught stuff about a motorbike that you think, Christ, that's, I never realised you could do that. And does that help you back on the road? I'm not saying you get your knee down going down the M3, whatever, but does it help you with your road riding as well then, Chris?
So what I would say, Dave, is that track days are brilliant because, yes, you learn to take the right lines. Go in, go out, where to lean, where not to lean. When you first go out, you know, you're taken around the track and you're shown how to negotiate the track. And then you do 20-minute, 30-minute stints at your level. So, you know, I'm, I'd like to think I'm great, but I'm not. So, you know, you're the third or the fourth group out because you're not as good as you think you are. Mm-hmm. But what the great thing I found about a track day is once I got into track days, it alleviated the need to try and do silly stuff on the highway. You don't need to do it anymore. Because I know twice a month, I'm going to go to Caldwell. I'm going to Snetterton. You know, you're going to all these beautiful tracks. You're going to Donington. You're going to Mallory. You're going to that place down in Wiltshire. You know, you're going to all these lovely places and you're trying stuff out and you realise the bike can do much more than you yourself can do. But I've got it out of my system. Because actually, going back to what we said right at the beginning, I actually really enjoyed the leisurely ride on a Sunday on my Jack Jones and just being part of the ambience. So I can do that there. You've got to do track days. You have got to. Because it gets all of that nonsense. Well, it's not nonsense, because if you love it, you love it. But it gets that boy racer, get your knee down, in the right context, the right place.
Yeah,
I think what it does, Prats, it itches that scratch for you, you know? Like Chris said, you can be sensible on the road, and obviously we'll look out for the other idiots out there who don't see you, but the track day enables you to learn from better riders than you. And like Chris, I couldn't have said it better. However good you think you are as a rider, you're not as good as your bike. You can never outclass your bike. What we ride, the modern bikes are so brilliant and they'll save you when they need to. But I think track days, it's the place to go and have a bit of fun. There we go. We can do one of these podcasts next series from a track day, Pros.
After I've wobbled around thinking I was going 100 miles an hour. When they tell you did 20 there, I'm like, oh, right. I feel like I was going really fast. So you mentioned modern bikes there. I mean, so we've kind of meandered our way to almost the present day then, Chris. So what's the bike situation now? What's currently ready to roll for you?
That is interesting because, I mean, I've said this. So at the moment, I'm not on a bike. I'm paying school fees and all that sort of stuff. But you know what?
I can see why that cuts into it.
I have been thinking recently about, you see, I've never had, when I say a trial bike, it bites to come on leaps and bounds, right?
Yeah.
And I don't want to race her anymore. I've done all that. But I like the idea of 1,000cc. I don't know which one yet, but you know, these trial bikes, you can put panniers on the back.
Mm.
And you know what? Going off to Germany again. I was in Spain recently, golfing, and this in the hotel, this guy, he'd come from Norway and on his trial bike and was on his jack, and he was doing this, you know, 2 or 3 days all up, and it was down in Spain. And I thought, mate, and he was away from home, away from his missus, away from life. And I thought, mate, you are spot on. Because again, you see, it was just him and his bike and the open road. Yeah. And he was going on a 3,000-4,000-mile journey over 3 weeks, riding his bike for, and then seeing places, sightseeing, cultures, foods.
At his own pace.
Hmm. At his own pace, mate. And he's on his jack. You know, it was jack. And I thought, and you know what? He's got my juices going again. I thought, mate, yeah, I like that.
Oh. Chris, you talk with such passion about that Norwegian and the road trip he went on. So we always love to finish the pod with this question because I know you're going to love it. This is it, right? I want you to have that idyllic mental image of riding off into the sunset. We know music, bikes have always gone together. So I want to ask you this, your fantasy dream ride. Where are you? Where are you going? What bike are you riding? And what's your soundtrack? What are you listening to?
Wow. Wow. Right, okay, mate. I'll tell you what. If I could be on this ride, I would be going from Morocco to Nigeria, through the Sahara Desert. This is imaginary, right? The food of Sahara Desert. I would have backup. So although I would be on my jack, you know, I'd have backup, you know, safety vehicles, all that stuff with me. I'll be going back to my roots as much. I'm born and bred. I'm a London boy, born and bred. But my mum and dad came from Nigeria. I've not been there for about 15 years. So I'd be going back down there on my bike, making it a queer. So even leaving my home in Bedfordshire, driving. So it'll be a massive man. I mean, this is six months. Going to Portsmouth, Le Havre, Spain, across Africa, Morocco. So what is this? 3,000 miles? 4,000 miles? And this song that would be accompanying me would be...
I think you can have more than one, Chris, because it is a long way.
No, it'll be What a Beautiful World. What a Beautiful World.
Oh, nice.
What a beautiful world. Because I am telling you now, you know, you jump on a plane and you fly to these places and you miss so much. But as you saw the vegetation changing from this inclement climate up here through to the dry, arid pastures, Madrid, Spain, Africa, then into this sort of palmy type West African environment, the red richness of the soil. Oh, gosh, mate, I tell you what a journey that would be. And to just touch the soil in Africa and just realise, yeah, you know what, I've lived all of my life in Europe, but I made it to the roots on the back of a bike. Yeah, that's what it would be, fellas.
What bike, Chris? Because you're gonna have a sore backside after that ride. What bike?
Well, mate, if you know what, it's gonna happen. It's gonna be my trial bike. It's gonna be my big old sit up trial bike, panniers, the old shield and stuff. Don't worry about me. Fashion follows function. It's got to be the old function. I don't want the sads to be in me. So it's going to come round like that. Yeah. And, you know, it gets cold, doesn't it, in the desert. So you need to have those heated things around your legs. I'm an old man now, fellas. I'm an old man. Yep. I'm not getting my knee down on that bike.
No. You need the heat, mate. I mean, you mentioned that, and I had the privilege of riding in Morocco a few years ago, and it was middle of summer, so June, and that sent, and like you say, the desert at night is cold. The desert during the day, my God, it's hot. So you'd lift your visor, I'll get a bit of fresh air in. It's literally like someone pointing a hairdryer in your face and blasting it back at you. You kind of sort of go, well, this, I'm really enjoying this. But once you get through that, and as you say about the different, the changes of the colours, the change in the people, the change in the culture, the change in what is the day-to-day, it's the way you describe it, and Ewan picked up on it as well earlier on in the podcast. I mean, if Chris Akabusi is not doing audiobooks, somebody is missing a trick, because your description, my friend, of just your life on a bike, your life off a bike, what you want to do between the two of them to mold them both together, that dream ride. I mean, if you need two companions for a dream ride, I'm not in the support vehicle, mate. I'm in the bike. I'm on the bike next to you, my friend.
Right, I tell you what, strange. Sometimes life is stranger than fiction. We might have this thing going on, baby. We might have this thing going on.
I'm looking at the three of us on screen here, and I'm thinking, forget your Charlie Borman, Ewan McGregor, Long Way Down. This is it, the duo. The good, the bad, the ugly. We're there.
I'll be the ugly, mate. Don't worry about that. I'll be the ugly. Don't worry about that.
Chaps, well, I mean, sadly, that's about it for this week's Full Chat, powered by Bike Show, which is a shame, as I could easily sit and rabbit with you all day long. It's the largest independent motorcycle broker, don't forget, and they will tailor quotes to exactly what you need on your annual bike, scooter, or moped insurance, and much, much more.
Honestly, on behalf of everyone, a huge thank you to our guest tonight. I could retire this podcast tonight happy. We've had the Boosie on. He has been truly remarkable. Thank you to the one and only Chris Akabusi.
Now, thank you very much, fellas. I love my time with you guys.
You're a star. And don't forget to follow us on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from, so that you never miss an episode, or you can watch the whole show on YouTube. Hopefully you've done that right now, because this has been the most animated one we've done yet.
It certainly has. Thank you so much for listening. I don't know how we're going to top this week. I don't think we can, but thank you very much. Until next time, goodbye.